My name is Bob Gizzardi. I'm the chair of the Philadelphia chapter of the Middle East Forum, and I'm very, very happy to see you all here. The purpose of the Middle East Forum, its mission is to define and promote American interests in the Middle East and help the United States defend itself at home and I think abroad. It's to deliver information and ideas to policymakers and to also engage with concerned citizens such as yourself. So I'm just thrilled to see so many people here. It's a not-for-profit organization, as you well know, relying on tax-deductible contributions. We have, in the spirit of return on investment, it's well-managed. I can tell you that. I am on the executive committee, and between Amy Chargal, our accountant, and our executives, we know where all the money goes, and I think it's been a highly productive and an amazingly effective organization. There's a staff of 18, and the budget annually is about $1.5 million. There's also additional funds that Daniel distributes to various think tanks and organizations that develop other information. Recent developments, the Middle East historian Ephraim Karsh was appointed the editor of the Middle East Quarterly. Ephraim Karsh, for those of you who don't know, is top of the line, first rate, the best. He is based in the internet age. He's based in King's College in England, but because of the internet, he can edit the Middle East Quarterly from anywhere he wants to. He just published an article in the New York Times showing why it is in the Palestinians' interest to make peace with Israel. Not that he's saying that that would happen, but why it would be. The Washington Project is Stephen Rosen's bailiwick. He just wrote an article for commentary discussing whether Obama administration will use the veto in Israel's defense at the UN and countered Peter Beinart's assault on Jewish leadership in a debate on the National Public Radio. Stephen Rosen used to be with AIPAC. He is one of the premier lobbyists, I would say, and lobbying is an American, we in our Constitution have an unalienable right to petition our elected leaders. That's what a lobbyist does, that's what Steve does, and he is near genius. If everybody could turn off their cell phones and pagers, we'll ask Mr. Carcenti to speak, and then at the end have some questions. I'd like to thank Drinker, Biddle, and Reith. Or Drinker Biddle, I guess it is. I don't know if it's still Reed. Drinker Biddle and attorney Neil Heyman for hosting this event. And as we go to different organizations, I note that we have silverware. Most of the time we have plastic, but here at Drinker Biddle we had silverware. So thank you very much, Drinker Biddle. Philippe Carcenti, there's a competition. I want to sort of generate a little competition. Pepper Hamilton has been hosted us. Blank Rome has hosted us. It's just amazing to me that it's the law firms that have been so open to Daniel Pipes and his ideas, and I think it's a tribute to that legal mind that wants to see all sides of the story and get the facts, because that is what primarily Daniel Pipes is one of the most intellectually honest people I know, if not the most intellectually honest, delivers facts with an analysis. Philip Carcenti, our speaker today, is a stockbroker and elected deputy mayor of, Neuilly, France, in 2008. So he's an elected official, which impresses me. And he was, and that was where President Sarkozy was formerly a mayor. He is currently dedicated to combating the Dora hoax, which you will see more of. What happened was, and to give you a little background, in 2000, France 2 television showed a Palestinian boy, 12-year-old Mohammed Al-Dora, being killed by Israeli soldiers during a gun battle in Gaza. This sparked worldwide anti-Israel hysteria. Doubting the veracity of the tape, Mr. Carcenti spent several years exposing how the network had broadcast staged footage of the alleged killing. France 2 sued him for libel. Things are a little bit different in France than here, I think, because I think this is the first time I've ever heard of a news station suing an individual. Mr. Carcenti lost the first round but succeeded at the appeals level and had the lower court judgment overturned in May of 2008. The network has appealed the decision to France's highest court. Mr. Carcenti is uniquely positioned to explain European media bias against Israel, its impact, how to combat it, and what to expect. And I will introduce Mr. Carcenti.
Well, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. Okay, if you don't understand my words in English, please just stop me and I will repeat them in another word. So, don't start. Okay, so I'm really happy to be here. Thank you to all the names here for inviting me. I won't read them, but you can read them. I'm very happy to be here at the Middle East Forum with Amy and invited by Danielle too. Because for me, these are friends, and these are one of the really early supporters I had in America, along with Camera or ZOA. So for me, it's really important to be here. I will first explain how I became involved in this case to expose the blood libel, the Aldera hoax. And then I will present you the video of the Mohammed Aldera, where it did come from, the 50 seconds, the consequences that it had in the world, and I will explain you also why it's we can and how we can prove it's a hoax. And I will conclude my presentation with some ideas and some news about the Aldera fight. So you have to understand the European situation. The European situation is that Europeans want Israel to make concessions to its enemies. So they need to demonize Israel. It's really important. So that they are using their media outlet.
Okay. Stand away. Though.
Stand away. Okay, sorry. So they are using their media outlets to construct a narrative in support of their policy. And any facts which are not going according to what they want are ignored. In 2002, this picture was filmed on September 30, 2000. But in 2002, when I understood that this news report was a hoax, a stage scene, I tried with many other people to have the truth revealed. I insist on the fact that I did not discover it was a hoax. It was discovered by Israeli scientists and American researchers. So when I went to the French, I used to be a stockbroker. So I had lots of contacts in the French business world, in the media industry. So I went to them and I said, look, I think that there is a problem with this film. You should admit it's a fraud. And they said, look, we're not listening to you as we're not listening to Holocaust deniers. I was shocked. So I tried to engage in a debate with them about this, and nobody would listen to me. I would say even the Israeli embassy would not listen to me. So in 2004, I was really desperate because nobody was interested by the truth. So I decided to publish a provocative article in order to create a public debate. And thank God they sued me for defamation. So my trial took place 2 years later, on September 2006, and it went very well. I was able to present my evidence, and France too didn't bring much to the court. They only brought some written testimonials, and especially a letter of Jacques Chirac. At that time, he was the French president, and he was saying that the journalist who made the blood libel, Charles Enderlin, was a very reliable journalist. So, at the end of my trial, which lasted an afternoon, the prosecutor, the government advisor, came to the conclusion that I was right, it was staged, and that I should be found not guilty of defamation. I was really happy. But a month later came the verdict, and I was found guilty of defamation. And I would say that, knowing the French system, I guess that the letter of Jacques Chirac had some importance in their decision. So I immediately appealed this decision, and the second trial took place on September 2007. Instead of lasting one afternoon like the first one, the judge interrupted the trial, and they say, wait a minute, France 2. You claim that you have 27 minutes of this incident, which was filmed by your cameraman, but you never brought these minutes to the court. So now the court is ordering you to bring these 27 minutes. 2 months later, they brought 18 minutes to the court. So they deleted 9 and they brought 18. In these 18, I mean, they tampered with the evidence, of course, as you can see. But with these 18 minutes, we could already see that it was completely ridiculous stage, and you will see part of it. So, the trial was then again interrupted, and we had the final hearing on February 2008. It lasted 7 hours. It was really a big fight between me and France too, and their lawyers. 3 months later, I won the case on appeal. So it was a big relief for me and for all the people who were working with me. A week later, just after I won the trial, Le Nouvel Observateur, which is one of the largest, which is the largest French weekly, issued a petition in support of Charles Enderlin, the guy responsible for the hoax. And they called me, they said that I was like a Holocaust denier. And it was signed by hundreds of journalists. And it was representing 100% of the French media, I insist. All the French media were represented in this petition. So that was a big problem, because even if you win the case, then you are having this kind of petition. So nobody knew in France that I won the case, because they really silenced the victory. Last year, Jacques Chirac, he left, thank God, but now we had Nicolas Sarkozy. And last year, Nicolas Sarkozy offered to Charles Enderlin the Legion of Honor. Okay. So after he lost the trial. So just that you understand how Charles Enderlin is supported by the French political sphere. 12 days ago, we celebrated the 10th anniversary of the Mohamed Al-Dura hoax. And since then, France too still does not agree to the hoax. But I'm optimistic. Since I engaged this fight, I'm really serious. I've always believed that the truth will be revealed next week. And I still believe that the truth is so obvious that next week we'll have the truth revealed. So I will present you a short PowerPoint presentation where you will first see the 50 seconds, which I claim are 100% staged, completely staged. Then you'll see the global consequences, and I will show you why we can prove it's a hoax. Before starting the presentation, I'd like to insist a few points. This demonstration has been based on experts' opinion coming from ballistic experts, forensic scientists, and biometricians. We have very limited time, so you'll see only 15 to 20% of my evidence. And if you have questions, of course, at the end I will answer all of them. And our sources are valid. None of the documents that you're going to see now has ever been contested either by the justice or by our opponent, France too. So if there is a way to turn up the light, I think it's going to be easier for the presentation. Thank you. Okay, so let's watch it. It's 50 seconds. It was aired by the France 2, which is state on TV. And it's, according to me, it's 50 seconds of completely staged hoax.
15 heures, il vient de basculer près de l'implantation de Netzarim dans la bande de Gaza. Les Palestiniens ont tiré à balles réelles, les Israéliens ripostent, ambulanciers, journalistes et simples passants sont pris entre deux. Ici, Jamal et son fils Mohamed sont la cible des tirs venus de la position israélienne. Mohamed a 12 ans. Son père tente de le protéger. Il fait des signes. Mais une nouvelle rafale. Mohamed est mort. Et son père gravement blessé.
Okay, so let's take a look at their version of the fact. First, they said that the soldiers were at a distance of 80 meters. Then they said that the Al-Dura, the father and the boy, were targeted and were shot intentionally for 45 minutes. Just think of it, something like the size of the screen, for example, if you want to shoot it at a distance of 80 meters, does it take you 45 minutes to shoot the target? Of course, it doesn't make sense. We asked to any soldier in the world, they said one or two bullets is enough. Then they said that the cameraman filmed 27 minutes of the incident, and that the boy was shot and killed with 3 bullets, and that the father received 12 bullets and was injured. So let's take a look at where it happened. So here you can see the Israeli stronghold. You have the distance and you have a sharp angle here. And here you have the barrel with the wall. When you take a look at the last picture, you can see something very interesting. Despite the 15 bullets that they should have received, you don't see a single drop of blood. Okay. Just without any investigation, just like that, 15 bullets. And if you just realize where were the Israelis, the bullet should come from this position, okay, from this side, and the guy doesn't move from 1 centimeter on the left, you know, but he received 12 bullets, according to them. So first, let's take a look at the worldwide exploitation, and then why it's inconsistent. So you had this kind of cartoons, you know, with Ariel Sharon. At the time, he was not even the prime minister in Israel. Then you had something much more elaborated, the postage stamps all over the Muslim world. You had Iran and Sudan and Iraq. But you also had something like Egypt or Jordan. Just that you understand that it came from the most extremist countries to the, I would say, the most peaceful countries to Israel. Never forget, it was a year before 9/11. So it was a year before 9/11, so Bin Laden used it in his video clips of recruitment to incite against the Jews, the Western world, and the state of Israel, of course. يا بنا ناظري ككل زعيم حظه في الوغى أداء ونفسك يا بنا ناظري كل جبار راح من ألد فارتخ يتوعد يا صبيا ما مات في أيدي اليهود لا تنادينا So the Ministry of Health in Gaza is called Maftir Mohammed Al-Dror. And this is a huge building in Iran, you can see, again, the side and the boy and the father. As you may know, Daniel Pearl was killed to avenge the fake death of Mohammed Al-Dror. So you will see part of the video clip. You won't see the ugly scene, but you will see the justification.
Der amerikanische Journalist Daniel Pearl war Jude. Seine Henker zwangen ihn, Israel als Kindermörder anzuprangern. Wenige Minuten später trennten sie ihm vor laufender Kamera den Kopf ab und stellten die Bilder ins Internet.
On the left-hand side here, you have a poster which is with a boy and the father and the boy, and stop killing Palestinian children. And what you will see is that at the same time, you had interviews of Marwan Barghouti using the same poster, stop killing Palestinian children. So it's something which has been used all over the Muslim world, all over the place, from PLO guys to Bin Laden. Then you have Lebanon. In Lebanon, you can see here the Hezbollah flag. You can imagine, you can see the size of this poster when you can see the size of this little girl. And here is something which is one of the most important monuments we had now in the world. It's in Bamako, which is the capital of Mali in Africa. And this is the largest square. For them, they told me it's like Times Square, you know, in Bamako. You can see. So let me show you now why we can and how we can see it's inconsistent. Of course, as I said, we have very, very limited time, so I try to make it very short. So let's take a look at the first scene, because remember I said that the scene of the boy was fake, but I even pretend and claim and have proven in court that even the first scene was fake. See this guy. I would like you to think of one thing. Have you ever seen someone shot live on TV by accident? I don't mean an execution, but I mean a cameraman being at the right place filming someone who got a bullet by accident. Have you ever seen that?
Kennedy?
Well, it was something, you didn't have something just in front of Kennedy. It was someone filming from far, you know, it's not something. Like, you know, you have a cameraman who knows exactly that this man will be a hero. And, I mean, Kennedy was the president of the United States. This guy is a nobody. Understand what I mean? Okay. So, let's just take a look at this one. Okay. So something very strange. The ambulance arrives in 2 seconds. It takes 2 seconds for the ambulance to arrive. Just, if my friend didn't ask you to turn off your cell phone, you would have received phone calls. It takes you more than 2 seconds to pick up your phone when it's ringing, just that you understand. Okay. But you remember I told you that the cameraman knew that this guy was going to be the hero of the day. But there was not only one cameraman, but a second cameraman filming from another angle. So he knew exactly that he was going to be the hero. On the right-hand side here, you can see the ambulance, that the ambulance starts even before he gets the bullet. Something funny again. You can see the man jumps in this direction, but if you remember the map of the place, he should be pushed towards the Jeep. No, he goes in the other direction, so it doesn't make sense. Then they will draw him on the floor. He will not have any blood on the floor. Then you will see him, they will carry him here, no blood on the leg, where he received the bullet on the right leg, according to him. And they put him on the stretcher, on the right leg, and he doesn't complain. Just that, you know, we have, again, in my longer presentation, you can see that when they're filming this, you can see people smoking in this area, and you can see 10 meters on the left-hand side, you can see the boy and the father already waiting for their scene. So we're faking, but they're waiting. So I'd like you to read some witnesses' declaration that Francou used at the court. Israeli soldiers were firing missiles. A plane was firing at them from overhead. And there were helicopter Israeli snipers firing anti-tank missiles. Meaning the whole Israeli army was fighting, the whole Israeli fight was trying to kill the boy and the father, but despite all that, you have not a single drop of blood. And you have 8 bullet holes after 45 minutes of shooting and plane and whatever. If you take a look at the size of these bullet holes, this is his round size, you can imagine if he got 12 of these holes in his body, it would be very, very problematic for him. Now we have a 90-page ballistic expertise, which tells us that these round bullet holes prove that the shooting was perpendicular, not coming from this angle. Because if it was coming from this angle, you would have had oval shapes on the wall, not round bullet holes. Okay? So remember, I told you that we had a trial when the judge asked for the 27 minutes of the incident, and they brought only 18 minutes. In this raw material, we had the 10 following seconds when the boy was killed. Okay? So let's take a look at what does a dead boy does when he is filmed by friends too. The father smiling, the boy is raising his elbow, and you hear a machine gun, ta 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 ta, but you see not just dust, okay? If you take a look, I'm sure, I hope we have a doctor in this room. Do we have a doctor in this room? Yes, okay. Can you do this when you're dead? Okay. And can you have your foot up when you're dead? Well, maybe it happened 2,000 years ago. I mean, someone resurrected 2,000 years ago. But you see here? You know, so you can see the foot is up, and you want to see it again? It's 10 seconds of fun. Smile. No blood, nowhere. I mean, okay. I understand that why it was so tough to get them from the court. We had to use the court to get them because they didn't want to release it, of course. So here is when the boy raised his elbow, you know. And in their version of the fact, they claim that the boy had 2 bullets which came in his body and went out on his back. No blood, nowhere. No blood, nowhere. So, of course, the Al Dahra news report was a stage. So this is, if you want some of this picture, if you want some material, and if you want to be informed of the following steps of the case, you can send me an email and I'll put you on my friend's mailing list. I'd like to tell you something now, in order to conclude. Al Dahra was very important because it was the starting point of the new campaign to delegitimize Israel. The Al Dahra story is still very important because it became the major icon used by our enemies to denigrate Israel, incite against the Jews and the Western world. The media is not only a reflection of our society, it's an opinion maker. Therefore, it has a huge influence in creating world hostility towards the Jews and the state of Israel. My personal solution to fight this bias has been to find an emblematic symbol of Jew hatred and Israel bashing, and to fight continuously against it, to have the truth revealed. For more than 8 years, I've been fighting against this with the support of many friends, especially like the Middle East Forum, which has been tremendously supportive of me for years, and Daniel Pipes, of course. And we've been showing all over the world that it's a blood libel. For years, we had media, the French media outlets, who always denied it's a hoax. And they only, as they cannot debate with me the facts, they were fighting me with ad hominem attacks. They were insulting me, and it was only personal attacks. And day after day, week after week, I present this evidence to individuals, influential politicians, to journalists, to intellectuals, just in order to convince them. And I want them to understand that with this kind of pictures, they can change, on the wrong side, the course of history. And my only goal is to force friends to have the truth revealed, to admit that they made a mistake on TV. I want you to understand that lies can be fought by truth. Only truth can correct it. The issue is to get the whole world understand that it's a hoax. But to get the whole world understand it's a hoax, you need first to have the guy who makes the hoax admit it. 5 days ago, Charles Enderlin, the guy who made this blood libel, not the guy who filmed it, it has been filmed by an Arab cameraman working in Gaza. Charles Enderlin is the chief bureau of France 2 in Jerusalem. He's a French Israeli Jew who made Aliyah 40 years ago, and he's the one who is responsible for the blood libel. I'll take the question at the end.
Okay.
Charles Enderlin, Enderlin. So 5 days ago, he published a book. The title is A Child Was Killed, in support of his blood libel. My major concern in this book, and if you want to read it, I wouldn't say I, but some people, nice people, put it for free online, so you can download it online if you want, not to give money to this guy, but just to read his ugly information about Israel. So he avoids to deal with the facts, he just attacks me, and he has only one strong argument, and I must say, if I were him, I think it's a wonderful argument. He said, I never received any complaint from the state of Israel. I never got any complaint from the state of Israel, which is the main concern, the main problem. And the book was published 5 days ago, and I am following the news in France every night through the internet. It's everywhere on TV, radio, newspapers. I mean, it's really, you know, for years it has been Israel bashing, now it's Karsanti bashing. I'm really glad to be here and not to have to hear and listen live this on TV. But 5 days ago they published it, and since then the Israeli ambassador or the Israeli Minister of Foreign Affairs did not deny any of his claims. Because he claimed that his cameraman is great, he claimed that his work is fantastic, he never got any denial. So I think it's very important to have the truth revealed. I would like Israel to understand, and of course us, that no human, no decent human being can, can embrace a nation that enjoys killing innocent children. I mean, that's impossible to like this kind of country if you really believe that Israel killed this boy. It turns Israel friends into enemies, and it turns Jews against themselves and against the state of Israel. So Al-Dura was the first blood libel of the 21st century, and we had many more which came later on. And I think this is why it should be debunked. And I will tell you something. I will fight, and I will have no rest until France to admit the fraud, and will fight until the end. Thank you very much.
Well, as Philippe said, he'll be glad to entertain some questions. Gentleman all the way in the back there.
After the second trial, what was the coverage of the American?
American press? Well, for example, the Wall Street Journal in Europe published a two-page article, very interesting about it, but it was not taken by the American Wall Street Journal. Some newspapers, some websites took it, but I'm going to give you an example of what happened with Fox News. Fox News, I came and I went and met them, and I showed them this, and I showed them a longer presentation. But the main problem with them is when they understood that their cameramen working for them in Gaza were faking the same kind of news. So they said, well, we're not going to reveal this because otherwise we would have to reveal that all the news that we're showing coming from the Middle East are fake. So this is a big problem because you have journalists, you know, when you attack this kind of, I'm not a journalist, I've never been a journalist, and I don't want to be a journalist, I want to be part of this corporation, you know. And even though you have great journalists, but I don't want to be part of it, I think it's really something which has to be revealed. I'm just fighting for the truth. But some journalists feel that they are attacked when you're revealing the truth on this case. I'm not attacking them, I'm just telling them, look, this is a case where it's a lie, it's an obvious lie. We've proven it everywhere in the world. I'm telling you, I can. I don't want to drop names, but I've been in all cities. I've been in India, in South Africa, in Turkey, in Israel, all the countries in Europe. All the universities have admitted that it's a hoax, but only in France. France is like a North Korean. We have North Korean borders when it comes to the truth about the Middle East. You know, nobody wants to know the truth about what's going on there. And it will destroy their narrative about the Middle East. It's very important to understand that. For them, they have created a story, I would say maybe 30 years ago, that Israel is a bad guy and the Arabs are the victims, and they have to feed this story every day, every day, every day.
Larry?
Has there been any effort to actually find the way
of... Okay, I will answer you with a simple question. I will answer a quote. I don't know if the taxi driver who took me from my airport yesterday, from the airport to the hotel, is still alive. I cannot prove this now. I cannot prove that the boy is alive now, and I don't even care, because even if I bring someone here, hello, I'm Mohammed, I'm 22 years old. I've been studying in Boston for the last 10 years because I was undercover there. They wouldn't believe me. I mean, what I want you to understand, that if you have people who have the bad face to say no, they are killed. He can raise his elbow, but he's dead. The father got 12 bullets, but he doesn't bleed. That's normal. That's the main problem. You cannot fight against them, even if you bring the boy. So some people have been looking for him, and some people pretend that he's selling fruits in the market in Gaza. And some people say, yes, he's called Mohammed al-Dara because he looks like. I don't know, and I don't even... Because if I go into that, then I will. It will be a waste of time for me.
I'm wondering what your understanding or belief is as to why Israel has been so reluctant to complain about the situation we're going to support.
First, I'm so unhappy that... nobody came from the Israeli consulate today. I called them yesterday again. I said that I'd be very happy. And 2 years ago, I was invited by the Israeli consulate, and they were very friendly, and they invited me to go around. So I don't understand why they're not. Look, this is the main problem now in this case. I know that Charles and Erlin has huge friends inside the Israeli establishment, for sure. He's very well connected. He's French, Israeli. He's been there for 40 years. He's been helping them in I don't know what, where. If I can make it rational, because this is what I'm telling you is not rational, I can make it rational. At the beginning, when I came to the Israeli and I said, look, it's a blood libel, it's a hoax. They said, no, it's not a hoax, and you're crazy. Okay. Then when they understood it was a hoax, they said, but we don't care, it's not important. They said, no, it's important because it's historical. It's becoming the worst picture for the state of Israel since its creation. No, it's not true. And then when they realized, okay, but it's 8 years ago, it's 7 years ago. I said, okay, but they're going to use it again and again. And now I think that one of the problems is also that you have people who made the mistake years ago who are still inside the Israel system, and they're fighting inside the Israel system not to have their mistakes revealed. Because, I mean, the French journalist who made a mistake, of course, when he took the picture of this cameraman, and he doesn't want to admit that he made such a mistake. And now what you can see is that it's also a question of ego. I think a question of ego means people who made the mistake years ago don't want to admit it. And there are maybe other reasons. I mean, we've been to the Mossad and all the story. Maybe he's a... No, there is nothing... we've been into this field just to understand, is there something like that? No, there is nothing like the Mossad knows something that we don't know.
Bob, Mr. Karslake, am I wrong that I thought that the Israelis themselves had proved this to be a hoax.
Who? Which Israel?
With their own their own documentation.
You mean the Israeli army? The IDF?
Yeah, intelligence.
No. To be clear, the discoveries has been made by an Israeli scientist whose name is Nachum Shaaf, but the Israeli army never endorsed his conclusions. What they said 2 months later, that to their best knowledge, they were not responsible for the shooting, but they're still thinking that that the boy was killed. I had a conversation last week when I was in Paris with someone working at the Prime Minister office, and they were on the verge to release a letter that I was really opposed to, which was saying, to our best knowledge, we did not kill the boy. He was probably killed by the Arabs, you know. And this is insane, because if you cannot just go straight to the truth and put just an half truth, it is not the truth. So I said, no, block this letter. I don't want this document out. I want something strong which goes and says, this is a hoax. That's it. But there is no otherwise. I mean, otherwise, Anderlin couldn't go anywhere on TV. I mean, just Google my name, Karsanti, on TV. It's easy. Okay, Google on Google News, and you'll see all the interviews he's been giving, the newspapers, and he repeats, I received the support of the Israelis authority.
When I hear about this journalist being Jewish, it feels like a knife to the heart. But it makes me think, you know, you say, well, what could be his motivation? And then I recall hearing that a great percentage of Israelis are far left. And they want peace now. And maybe that's why there are lots of people in
I must say something. I want to be very clear on that. I don't think that being far left makes you Israel hater. I mean, Israel bashing. You know, I'm telling you something. One of my strongest supporters is Eli Barnavi, who's an historian who used to be an Israeli ambassador to Paris, who's far left. He's Meretz. You know, he was close to Meretz in Israel. So he's really far left, and he's one of my strongest supporters. Just that you understand, it's not a right or left position. I met Lieberman, and Lieberman didn't do anything. I had dinner with him, with some friends. He didn't do anything to support me. BB, I met his guy. One of my oldest friends at school is one of his closest friends now. Okay? I asked him to do something. BB didn't do anything to have the truth. So it's not a leftist or a rightist. It's the truth. And it's a question of understanding. You have people who don't understand the importance and what we're experiencing in the whole world. Because, you know, an Israeli who lives in Israel never sees this picture of Mohammed al-Dara. But you, when you're going out in any university, you're seeing these posters, you know, the crimes of the Israeli army. So you have to understand, this is not a partisan issue. This is something about truth. And I think it's really, really important.
But what would motivate a Jewish man like Charles Enderle to stage a fraud so horrible to his own country and people?
Okay. First, he was not the one who staged. He was the one who took the material and who edited and who put his voice over. This is first. Second, he may have made a mistake, maybe. Maybe it was intentional. But on the other side, you have to understand that before being a Jew and in Israel, he's a human being. He must have... Look, I'm going to give you an information. You can use it if you want to even publish it. I don't care. Once I met one of his cousins, who's very close to him, and he told me something. 30 years ago, he's been taken by the PLO. Okay? PLO was feeding him with information. So he became one of the big stars of French journalism, and he told me it was exactly like in USSR, when the KGB was giving you information, then you were becoming a big star in the American press, in the Western press, because you were having information before Khrushchev was out, or, you know, you had information before the other one. And he was taken by the PLO. He got information about all of them before everybody. So he became a very, very high-profile figure in the French media. And then after the time, you know, it's like a drug, you know. He's taking the information from them. So his source is the PLO. And now he's working and working and working with them. But I'm telling you something, you know, we're talking about the Jews. My worst opponent in France in fighting this are some, I would say, very top journalists, Jewish top journalists. Le Nouvel Observateur, which is a weekly which presented the petition against me, is created by Jews, led by Jews, directed by Jews, all of them are Jews. So it's not, you know, it's something, and don't call them self-hating Jews. I would say it's self-loving Jews, you know. They love to see themselves doing criticizing Israel.
Have you got any direct response, either from Davey, Lieberman, any of these people, direct response to why they do not want to, especially now with the book coming out, you know, say, we believe this was a hoax and this is untrue?
This is the main problem. No, I did not. I'll be in Israel next Tuesday. I'm finishing my tour here after Canada and Chicago, and then I'm going to Israel straight because I want to know exactly what's going on. I'm trying to put pressure just to ask the truth why they're not willing to fight, why they are not willing to reveal the truth. That's it. I want it. I want it because then we'll be able to fight. Because in France, we're getting more and more support. I mean, I didn't tell you because, we have limited time, but 4 months ago, I had a French senator, a non-Jew French senator, who went at the Senate hearing, and who, when he had the boss of the French public TV, he asked him about, please reveal the truth on the Aldera story. You know, it was like, very strong. So we're getting support. In Israel, it seems that it doesn't work.
Well, let me just add in, as a member of the Tea Party, we have seen the effectiveness of the internet. So you you familiar with the Tea Party?
Yeah, of course.
There's an internet out there that I'm shocked that this, you know, they didn't say, gee, I'm wrong, I forgot about it. And I don't think I've ever heard of a news agency suing an individual. I mean, has anybody ever heard of such a thing?
One little fact I'll ask you just throw out. I remember hearing you in Philly a number of years ago, something about the Moore.
The Moore.
You did that a couple years ago, the Moore.
Okay, yeah. Okay, because one of the claims, you know, when you're not dealing with this case seriously, you can be manipulated. You know, France too brought picture of the morgue, okay? And then you see a dead boy at the morgue, and it can look like. So we took a biometrician. The biometrician said, no, the face of the boy at the morgue is not the face of the boy which is filmed. But not only that, the doctor who got the boy at the morgue said, well, the boy arrived at 10 a.m. in the morning at the hospital. He had 2 bullets in his stomach, which went out, and 1 on the left leg. But when you listen to them, the guy has his bullet on the right leg, and the film started at 3 p.m. So he was killed at 10 a.m., and then he was alive at 3 p.m.
Sir?
Yes, I have a question for Mr. Parsenti, but before I ask the question, I would just like to make a comment to the madam over here, who was surprised that a Jew would do such a thing. I accept Mr. Parsenti's explanation, what's called a psychological explanation. But here's a political explanation for it, granted, with the history of the communist movement in the world. The Soviet Union and the communist parties all over the world were strongly anti-Zionist and were engaged in very strong anti-Zionist propaganda, and much of that was done by Jews. As a matter of fact, if you study the history of the Zionist movement, they used to consider that their two main enemies in the Jewish people were the communists and the, let's just say, some would say the Jewish bankers, but we won't get into that, the Warburg, et cetera. So it's not new that Jews would attack Zionism. As a matter of fact, I've been researching the Communist Party in Palestine many years ago, and there were posters, handbills rather, that were being given out on the docks in Haifa to German Jews who were arriving as refugees by Jewish communists and handbills and symbols of the Far Cry University, National Library, which say, get away from the Zionist hell. In other words, telling them to go back to Nazi Germany. This was given out by Jews on the docks in Haifa. That's just a historical comment. Mr. Parsenti, I have an abiding interest in propaganda and its uses in politics. You said you have a firm belief and your behavior proves that you do, that truth in the end will prevail. I'm asking you from, let's say, the technical viewpoint. How are you struggling to make truth prevail when you're confronted not only with, let's say, partisans who take advantage of the lie, but the media through which we have to operate to disseminate information is actually perverted for partisan purposes? How are you struggling? What is your methodology?
Mm-hmm. Well, my methodology, I mean, you know, you have to understand, I'm alone. You understand? I'm not an organization, you know, and I'm not so well organized as you may imagine. I was thinking my my way of spreading the truth has been to traveling all over the world. Really, as I said, South Africa, India, wherever I was invited, just to convey the message, just to spread the message. Then in France, you know, I'm working full day. All of my time is dedicated to this, going to politicians, journalists, and convincing them progressively. I can give you one example of one of our simple victory. Have you heard, are you familiar with Reporters Without Borders?
Yeah.
Okay. They're probably one of the worst organizations against Israel. The guy who founded this organization, his name is Robert Menard, signs a petition calling me a Holocaust denier, okay? But once a friend of mine called him and said, you know, Carsanti is right, and he laughed. He said, I'd like to see that. Why not? So I met the guy. I made for him a presentation. And last month, he has a magazine. Last month, he gave me a 5-page interview in his magazine. And he even put me here on first page, Carsanti, Philippe Françoise tells nonsenses. Okay, so we're gaining people one after one. I don't have any methodology, political message or whatever. One of the other thing I did was being elected. Why? Because people were saying, look, you're nobody. We don't listen to you. You're just a stockbroker. And we don't care about a former stockbroker. So 2 years ago, 2 years and a half ago, I was elected deputy mayor. So now it gives me some, you know, I'm a French elected official. As you know, we know it's nothing, you know, just between you and I. But for some people, no, you know that. I mean, there's no, well, I'm not going to play with you like that. But for some people, oh, he's the deputy mayor of Neuilly-sur-Seine. You know, it's like, and Sarkozy was the mayor, so he could be the next president, you know. You understand? You know, just trying to gain credibility. It's a long path, you know. It's a long path. I'm going to give you an example of what happened. You know, the Israeli ambassador 4 years ago when he arrived in Paris, I met him in a cocktail party. I said, hello, my name is Philippe Carsanti. And he said, exactly like Bob. Okay, 2 weeks before I won the trial, and this proves you that they really have good secret services, he got the verdict before me, because 2 weeks before I got the verdict of the trial, I got a phone call from the Israeli embassy, Mr. Carsanti, Mr. the ambassador would like to meet you. Mm-hmm. So I met him and said, oh, today you will shake my hand? Yes, okay. And then he started to apologize, you know, Charles Andolin was an old friend of mine. I said, I don't care, let's move forward. But 4 years he's not been doing anything. So, you know, at least he's not undermining my efforts. You understand what I mean? So that's where, look, I'd love to have a methodology. I'd love to be, I tried everything. And I'm moving forward a little bit. The next trip in Israel has to be very productive. It has to be very productive. Because now, especially since we have the book, you know, everybody said, oh, you should have published your book before him. I said, of course not. You know, when you're playing poker, you know, it's a 10-year poker party that we're playing now. He's putting all his cards on the table with his book. No, I'll be able to bring mine, you know, and I'll be able to build against him all his argumentation. I think it's very important. It's a historical, I mean, this, I'm telling you something, you know, once in France, we have our Rahm Emanuel. He's not a Jew, but we have our Rahm Emanuel. His name is Claude Guéant. He's the Secretary General of the Élysée. And I met the guy. I made a presentation for him. And he said at the end of the meeting, oh, the truth has to be revealed. I said, yes, but you're almost the boss of the state, and it belongs to you, this company. Why don't you make? He said, well, I don't know if we have this power. So I told him, you know, you're working for President Sarkozy? I said, yes, and I'm very proud of it. I said, look, who was the French president 100 years ago? So the guy starts, voila. Okay, don't bother you, nobody knows them. Félix Faure and Émile Loubet. Oh, yes, yes, okay. Yes, yes, okay. What happened 100 years ago in what happened in France between 1895 and 1905? What happened? Dreyfus, exactly. Okay, this is a Dreyfus case against the state of Israel. So I told him, in 100 years, nobody will know who was Sarkozy or who was Jacques Chirac, but everybody will believe and remember that France too, the French public TV, the French state, covered up such a blood libel. And this is what I... So, you know, it's a long way. It's a long way. And we are getting alive. And by the way, I would like to ask you a question in this room, and there is no problem with that. Is there here anyone in this room who has a doubt that it was staged? No doubt. Okay.
Now, by the way, I saw that you had done a longer presentation for the Cameron ZOA, a much longer presentation, and it's an overwhelming case that this is a fraud. And for all the time, what I'm surprised is you're still around, because nobody said, gee, you know, he's a nut. I mean, nobody challenges you. This book is actually maybe the best thing that ever happened to you.
Because nobody believes now it's not a stage hoax. Is there anyone in his room before who believed it was a hoax? I mean, okay, you believe it was a hoax, but okay, but not all of you knew it was a hoax. Not all of you knew. So now we have 50 more supporters, you know? So we are getting ground, you know, and I'd love you that you send me an email. Just I put you on my friends mailing list. Like this, I will send you some updates and you'll spread them around. And you know, it put pressure on the French system. You know, I'm going to give you something. It goes against me, but I want you to know something. The French state of mind has been completely influenced by the protocol of the Elders of Zion. The French mind believes that that the American Jews control the world. The American Jews control the world. That's for sure. You know, that's for sure. They really believe that. So why I'm so often in America is because I think this is the only way to put pressure on them. I won't name the organization, but I had a big argument with an American Jewish organization who has been really bothering me during all these years. When I had the French Jewish organization who were lobbying in my favor, they were saying, but look, the American Jews are telling us that you're wrong. You understand what I mean? So the American Jews are the most powerful people according to French political views. Sorry. Yes, Roxy, lady.
I just want to make a point. You had told us a little story about the financing of a particular mosque in France, and I was wondering if you'd tell us the unusual financing.
Yeah, but I will state it, but this has nothing to do with it. Well, we have a mosque which is in France, will be financed by a French Jewish philanthropist. Just that you understand what the state of mind of Dimitri in France. But it's
such a so kind of interesting thing.
Yes, Roxy. Yes. Look, at this stage, I've not met Netanyahu. I've met his second guy in common with Ron Dermer a year and a half ago. Take us to nowhere. He didn't understand the case. He did not understand it was staged. So that's, for me, that's insane. He didn't want me to open my computer. He said, no, I don't want to see that. I want them to take a strong position and say, this is a stage hoax. We want this to be revealed. That's it. We want this to be corrected by the French public TV. And the major mistake that the Israelis are making is that they're thinking that they're going to alienate Sarkozy. But that's a huge mistake, because my enemies are Sarkozy's enemy. Sarkozy is depicted in the French media as a monster, as a Jew, as anything. You know, they hate him. And we have the same enemies. But the main problem is Sarkozy is also surrounded by, I would call, I don't like self-hating Jews, I would say self-loving Jews, self-in-love, narcissistic Jews, who wants to present themselves, you know, I'm against Israel, so I'm a good guy.
Well, a lot of having grown up in France, I've encountered a lot of Jews that felt French before they felt
French. I have no problem. Look, I have no problem. You know what? I have no problem even with a French Jew who says, I'm not a Jew anymore. But we're not talking about Jewish, we're talking about the truth. You have to, I'm sorry to insist on that, you have to understand, it's a problem for the French democracy. You're living in the state where the French state-owned TV is lying on such an important issue, and they're covering up, and they're having the support of all the other information. I'm telling you something, one day they will lie about, I don't know, the Freemasons or whatever, and then what's going to happen? Nobody will reveal the truth, and then all the system will be against the Freemasons? That's crazy. That's insane. You cannot live in a democracy when the state lies. We cannot live in a democracy when the media are lying. Democracy is not only voting. Democracy is voting, fair judicial system, and correct information. If you don't have the correct information, you cannot vote properly.
Yeah, but in the big picture of journalism, you see it all the time where you have wrong information passed around, and it seems like it's accepted.
But let me ask a question. In the United States, as you know, there's free press. All the media is, with the exception of, say, NPR, is not government-owned. How is it in France? Are there private publications? I mean, you speak like somebody who understands the American First Amendment.
Okay, we have in France, first, the French public TV, which has like 5 TV channels, and the French public radio, which has 5 radio or 6 radio stations. All the newspaper, I insist, 100% of the newspaper are subsidized by the state. Le Figaro, Le Monde are receiving, I would say, maybe between 30 to 60% of their funds coming from the state, from subsidized, okay? Everybody gets money from the state. We live, I'm sorry to say that, but it may appear ridiculous, but we live in a country where the state controls a lot of things. Let me give you something. The French private TV, the largest one is TF1. TF1 belongs to a company which builds roads and bridges and all the contracts that you get from the state. So you cannot alienate your relations with the state, because then if you do this, then the state, the guy who owns Le Figaro is Dassault, you know, Dassault, the planes, okay, the planes, fighters, like F-16, but lower class. Okay, so F-16, the guy sells, the only client that he has in the world is the French government. He never sold any in the world, okay, never in the world. How come he cannot alienate his relationship with the French state? I mean, so it's very important. The media are controlling everything. You don't have, you know what you have here? Let's say a billionaire here who sells ketchup, for example. He's a free man, because the American government cannot order to the people, don't buy Heinz ketchup. In France, we don't have this kind of billionaires. All billionaires are, I would say it's almost like in Russia now, are under the supervision of the state.
Thank you, ma'am.
I have a disconnect here. You are exposing a blood libel against Israel and the Jewish people. Why would the Christians go around calling you a Holocaust denier? That's a disconnect. And a second question, you're traveling the globe and speaking the truth. Where do your funds come from? Do you have a foundation or friends
who are
funding your travel?
Okay, first I said, they don't say I'm a Holocaust denier. They say I'm like Holocaust denier. I'm practicing negationism. You know, they say, I'm sorry, I made it not so clear. They say, Karsanti is practicing negationism. Okay, now I'm going to answer the question about the money, but this is completely off the record, so all the people writing don't have the right to write. And, okay, first, I'm 44. I used to be a stockbroker, and my parents were comfortable. So first, at the beginning, I used my own money. Then when I was, because the legal trials are very, very expensive, as you can imagine. Then I went to my dad. Said, Daddy, can you help me? I said, okay. Then it became more and more important. So I had to find some friends. And look, it's very, very sensitive. I'm telling you why it's sensitive, because if anyone knows in France and conveys a message that I'm receiving funds from supporters in America or anywhere in the world, I would be considered as an agent from the CIA or the Mossad. They've always said that I'm a member of working for the Mossad. You know, so of course I'm still looking for, but I need donors to support me in this kind. And the Middle East Forum has been helping me very, very, very over very much. Yeah, you can applaud the Middle East Forum, because they've been doing something very...
Yes, I know. This is not the only thing that Daniel does. A lot of other things are sensitive, but you can trust Daniel's intellectual honesty.
Thank you, Ron. Thank you for a beautiful presentation. I was there 2 years ago when you presented me that the consulate was very, much more detailed than that. We know that this is not the first time, of course, because after that, in Jenin, there is Hollywood.
Yeah. Hollywood is Palestinian Hollywood.
Right. All make of things. When the guy was in Jenin, who was on the stretcher, himself on the stretcher, going back.
Yeah. Okay.
How much support do you get from honest reporting, camera, and
okay.
They support you or not?
And look, the support in terms of, if I'm here today, it's because yesterday I was at the camera conference in Boston, so. Of course, we're very close, and camera is doing a huge job. And this, I was there. I was with Daniel Pipes too, in camera. So camera and I are working very closely. Hannes Reporting has been working very efficiently too. We have some allies all over the place. Some allies. ZOA is helping. Yeah, the website is not so good.
What about contacting me if they're interested?
interested.
Yeah, but you are sending me an email.
Or sending you an email, or contacting me.
Yeah, okay, you can contact Ami. Is my Ami is my Ami in French. Ami means friend. Okay, so. Yeah. So, but so did I answer your question?
Yeah. All the support that you get from the support.
Yeah, yeah. But and everybody, I mean, we are all on the same on the same side. Okay.
Dave.
Yeah, I'm curious about the your opinion on the motivation of the French government, which is standing by while this falsehood is being brought forth. Is, in your opinion, is part of their motivation, a fear of the growing Muslim population in France?
I could say that, again, most of the French media are led by Jews. The Muslims have no influence on the Muslims have no influence in the media. Of course, we have a growing Muslim population, of course, but this is not the point. The point is that you have a narrative which has been decided to demonize Israel. Eurabia, you know, the Eurabian project, which is to destroy Batior, to destroy the relationship between Europe and America, Europe and Israel, to put pressure on Israel and to promote the Muslim agenda of the Islamic conference. All of this is much more important. And you know, corruption is very easy, you know. You know, corruption is not only giving money, you know, corruption, oh, I invite you for a trip in Dubai or whatever, or you, I mean, it's, we are having the oil money goes everywhere in the French society. And I think that, you know, Saddam Hussein was paying all the political French leaders from the extreme right to the extreme left, you know. And this is why France was so pro-Saddam Hussein, you know. So, I don't believe it's a Muslim. We have a huge problem with the Muslim, but this is not the problem of the Muslim.
This is a topic. We start on time, and I'll take one more question.
Yeah, and if you want, look, I have more time after. If you want, we can have a conversation, because my plane is not yet ready. I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
You didn't strike quickly the commercial relationships. I believe that France has great reason to be pro-Middle East because that's where their market area is. That's what's driving the policy.
Okay, you're talking about interest. Look, I'm not sure. This is possible, but I'm not sure this is. I think that anti-Semitism, French anti-Semitism, what, you know, in 1945, people say, oh, the Shoah is, the Holocaust is over, now there is no more anti-Semitism. No, that's not true. They had to find another way to express their anti-Semitism. So they had 20 years where they were scratching their head, what can we do with, and now they found anti-Zionism. It's exactly the same thing. Now they're promoting anti-Zionism, but it's exactly the same thing. They hate the Jews, and they will convey this hate message for centuries. And, you know, when 100 years ago, when the French, and 200 years ago, when the French diplomacy was really against the Jews all over the world, you know, when we had, if you read Betrayal, the book of David Price Jones, which is a wonderful book, if you read this book where he explained all the anti-Semitism in the French diplomacy, the Arabs were still on their camels, you know, they had no oil, nothing, but they were still against the Jews. They hate the Jews. Money is something, you're right, but I think that it's deeply into the French intellectual sphere.
Well, thank you very much. I think there's a bigger story here.
I would like really.
But the real story is you have somebody committed to the truth, and that's a big deal. So thank you very much.
I really want to thank you, and I want to insist on one thing. Without the Middle East Forum, there is no fight possible, just that you know. Thank you very much.